The following recording offers you a number of different options for the Daf Yomi. It begins with a recording of this, the 13th cycle's Daf Yomi, and that's done rather rapidly, within a half an hour or less. That's followed by a quick review between 5 and 10 minutes, depending on the length of the Daf. After that comes the very same Daf from the previous cycle, done at greater length in much greater detail, with different participants in a different ambience. You could choose one for your original learning, one for review, alternate, or whatever you do, enjoy. Today's Daf from the Masechet Shabbat is Daf Chet, and we're holding at the bottom of Zion Amud Beit at the two dots. Gufa. Omre Chizda. Na'atz kanar b'rishut ha'yachid v'zorak v'nachal gabav afil gavoa mea ama chayav. So here, what Rav Chisda is saying, on the surface, is that even though we determined that Rishut HaRabim does not have an airspace above and beyond 10 Tvachim, and that 10 Tvachim High is considered to be a Makom Ptur, however, when it comes to Rishut HaYachid, the airspace continues up without limit. And therefore, if you throw from Rishut HaRabim into Rishut HaYachid, even though it's on top of a pole, that nonetheless, it landed in Rishut HaYachid. Now, of course, there's also a hidden message over here. The hidden message is that not only is there a question of the airspace, but there is also the problem of Mokum Arba Al Arba. And it's a pole. A pole is not a Mokum of Arba Al Arba. In which case, we seem to be saying that you do not require a Hanocha on a Mokum of Arba Al Arba. Does that mean, Lema Rav Chisda Yomak Rabbi? Does this mean that Rav Chisda agrees with the rabbi that we quoted earlier in the Masechta, the Tanya, Zorak v'nachal gabi ziz koshu, rabbi mechayev v'chachamim potrin? Since, according to this, Rebbe would say that if you throw something, assuming that we're talking about from Rishut HaRabim into Rishut HaYachid, and it landed on top of a small little jutting out piece that comes out of the side of a wall, and it lands there. So nonetheless, Rebbe says, even though that is not Arba Al Arba, but you're chayav, b'chachom, so you're potter, because obviously, where's the hanacha? So that would imply that he's simply repeating Rebbe's shita. Says Abaye, no, not at all. Actually, Rishut HaYachid Kuleyama Lo Plige, if, this is Rav Chisda's approach, Rav Chisda would hold that if we're talking about Rishut HaYachid, then forget about it. Everybody would agree. Now, just you should know, this little piece is taken out by many people. And all you have, according to them, is Omra. But the problem is that Tosafot clearly says before in that Dalit, he uses this line as proof of his contention of not understanding the entire Sukkah. So therefore, it also appears here that according to Rashi, there's maybe two possibilities. But in any event, let's read it. So if we read it, we could learn that according to Rav Chisda, if we were actually in Rishut HaYachid, he doesn't understand the machlokas of Rebbe and the Chachomim to be nogeir Rishut HaYachid. In the Rishut HaYachid proper, every what body would be made that it would be considered to be Hanocha. You assume we were talking about throwing from Rishut HaRabim into Rishut HaYachid. No, over there everyone would agree. What the reason would be for this could be, does it suggest, because maybe we view every Rishut HaYachid as essentially being filled. As we said before, in the case we have a roof over the Rishut HaYachid, like where the ball flew in through one window and out through the other window. Okay, there may be other issues, which is that in the Rishut HaYachid, what Rebbe Chisda holds everybody would be made of, is that in a Rishut HaYachid, we look at the base of something. The base of the thing, if the base of the thing is Arba Al Arba, I don't care precisely which part of the device it lands on. So let's see, you have a table, that is, or better yet, bookshelves. And you have a little piece for your telephone that's jutting out of the side. And this thing lands on the part where the telephone was supposed to be. So you're going to say, well, but this thing isn't Arba Al Arba, so? But it's essentially, it's like it's on a base of Arba Al Arba. So the whole thing is considered to be connected directly to the ground. There, I would say, Tainazabai, that Rav Chisda would be telling him that wouldn't be an issue, Bichlal. What we're talking about over here, where we have the machloket, is where you involve yet another question. What's the other question? Over here, there's a tree that's growing in Rishut HaYachid, and a branch juts out from this tree into the Rishut HaRabim. You threw it onto that branch. That's the question. So Zorak v'nach anofa. Now the question is, would we say that we go according to the base, even vis-a-vis the determination of what Rishut it's in, or not? That's a different question. So over there, Rebbe holds, even Legabi this halacha, Look at where it's connected. It's connected to Rishon LeYachid, then this is an extension of Rishon LeYachid. And therefore it landed in Rishon LeYachid. Whereas Rabbon and Savri, lo aminu shedinofo batar ikaro, according to the Rabbon, no, come on, it's not any different than your hand. Your hand is sticking out. Nobody suggested that your hand is considered to be connected to you, derech the ground. So this is the same thing. It's basically in a makom ketor, sitting there, hanging in the middle of the air. Yes, sir.
It's more than 10 tefachim, right? The branches?
In Rishon LeYachid or in Rishon
LeRabim? The trees in the...
No. So then if you hold Shedino Fo Batar Yikaro, then it would be in Rishon LeYachid. It makes no difference how high it is. Then it makes all the difference in the world, sure. Then if it's not Shedino Fo Batar Yikaro, it's in Mokram Ptur. Completely. It would be Mutter.
This is what happens here. I have a phrase, a story about Noetz Kona, and I have one about Al Gaviziz, and now I'm saying that it's about a tree. I don't understand how these things connect.
Boy, you're a real literalist. There are two different issues initially, which we turn into three issues. There are three cases. The simplicity is that all three cases are talking about where something lands on something that is not a full arba arba. Now, in one case, it's simply a pole that goes straight up and down and involves the question of the height. So if it's more than 10 tefachim, if it's in Rishon LeYachid, it's still considered to be in Rishon LeYachid. That's all the Rav Chisda said, okay? It's evident from there, if something lands on top of a pole, that it doesn't need to be arba arba. We suggested that that is similar to the case of landing on a little piece that's jutting out of a wall. What's the difference between that and a pole? So we suggested that apparently those are two the same halachas. Says if I know they're not the same halachas. Because if something lands on something which is jutting out on something that has a base of arba, everybody would agree that it's considered to be connected to the ground if we're talking about Rishon LeYachid. Why dafka we'd have to be talking about Rishon LeYachid? We didn't get into the details. It is possible, as Tosis explains, that there is no real case that we could conceive of in Rishon LeRabim. Because if there is a base, then Mamon Efshak, if you're within three tefachim of the ground, and therefore it's not a Mokom Ptur, not a Karmelit, so then it's Rishon LeRabim. So what's the difference? Once it goes above three tefachim, you get into the question of it being either a Karmelit or Rishon LeYachid or a Mokom Ptur. But where would you ever get a case where it would be Munach in Rishon LeRabim? That's Tosis' analysis before. Let's not get too confused about it. So we said, therefore, that these two cases are not the same at all. A pole has no base, and a piece jutting out of a piece of furniture has a base. And that's the difference. And therefore, we said that we have a case here, in order to avoid any connection between the Rebbe's case and Rav Chisda's case, where Rav Chisda is timing that Rebbe and the Rabbanan are arguing about an entirely different question. We're all agreed that we look at the base, if we're talking about Rishon LeYachid. The question is, do we look at the base even where the shelf is jutting into Rishon LeRabim, or do we look at the base only where the shelf is on a piece of furniture and the whole thing is in Rishon LeYachid? That's the question, all right? Rav Chisda personally holds, even if you don't have a base, because he doesn't believe he's associated with Rebbe's opinion here. Rebbe's opinion is something else. That's also we have three separate sugyas, each one of which is represented by another case. Pole, ziz, and a branch of a tree sticking into another rishon. Okay. Now we get into a fascinating question. How about if you throw a rishus? You throw the actual rishus. So then, the rishus clearly couldn't possibly be considered to have left the din of its own rishus, despite the fact that it may be embedded in a different rishus. So you throw a Rishon LeYachid into a Rishon LeRabim. How could you do that? A big box. So the box itself has the requirements of Rishon LeYachid, which are not all that great. Take a refrigerator box, throw it in, and you've thrown it into Rishon LeRabim. You've thrown in a complete Rishon LeYachid into Rishon LeRabim. There's no such din of carrying. That's not called carrying. It never leaves the definition of itself. But how about where you have a rishus? This is really an amazing case. You have a rishus which comes into being as rishus, as it's landing.
Space capsule.
Right. Now this, of course, can only happen because of the magic of lovehood. Remember that halakhically, we extend force fields, essentially, and call them mechitzas, right? We just got finished our sukkahs. Richie had a whole circuit that was made out of four strings. You know? Pretty good. So here is where things get interesting. And once we're already talking about it's being interesting, we want to, of course, make it as information dense as we possibly can. So we involve all kinds of other issues. We involve the question of the measurement of the square root of 2, la halacha, And we involve the question of something that's round as opposed to something that's square, and whether we can rely on the area or whether we actually need to have the squares that would fit, all those kind of minor details. And we already want to involve the question of how about if a certain piece of what I'm throwing sticks up above the 10 tefachim, is that considered not to be munach? As we already saw, in the case where something falls out of my hand, half of it falls out of my hand, if I'm reading a sefer, it's not considered to be munach, if part of it is above asara tefachim, and so on and so forth. So we have a very beautifully information-rich case coming up. And it's really quite simple. The yesodos are quite simple. You know, of course, everybody makes a big deal of it, but there's really nothing to it. Well, I'm rabbi. So somebody picks up a kaveret. So a kaveret is essentially a hive-shaped container, which was the standard way to keep bees. And it would sit upside down on a base, and it would curve upwards. As, you see, until the modern approach where you could open it up and remove pieces of it and leave it. That's a very recent invention, relatively recent invention. But you see, they would make fake beehives, literally beehives. And that would be a kaveret. So now, suppose you throw something of this shape into Rishut HaRabim. It is 10 tefachim high, but it's not 6 tefachim wide. If it's not 6 tefachim wide, then remember, la halakha, the square root of 2 is 1.4, exactly. We disregard the rest of the fraction, halacha. So these are all part of the rounding off things that halacha does. If that's the case, if we don't have an area that we can actually inscribe a square of 4x4, and don't tell me, but you still have you have the square footage. That I don't want the square footage. The din is I need to have an actual arba al arba. So in order for me to have arba al arba, I'm going to have to be able to inscribe in 6 my square. A 4. So therefore, if I don't have 6, if that's the case, it would be a kli. It wouldn't be a rishus. Because if it isn't 4, then I don't have a rishus hayachid. In that case, I'm throwing a kli. So when I throw a kli into another rishus, obviously, I'm going to be behind. As I said, potter, I apologize. Okay, so if I have 4x4, the deal is that I have, then 0.4 is 2/5. That's how we measure it. So every tefach is a tefach and 2/5. All right, so that would really mean that we need the 5 tefachim and 3/5 in order for me to get to the 4x4. So I'm going to multiply now my 4 times 2/5. So I'm going to have 8/5. 8/5 equals another tefach plus another 3/5.
I didn't know we were doing math this morning, but if it fell, it's gahulat.
Let's talk about two dimensions instead of three, and that way we can get things very simple. So I have a two-dimensional square, 4x4. Since halakhically the diagonal of that square is the side times 1.4, so if I multiply the diagonal is actually the square root of 2, right? That's the Pythagorean theorem. If you have 1 by 1, then the diagonal of that square is the square root of 2, which is 1.4. That's the hypotenuse of that triangle. So now I'll round that off instead of 2, really the square root of 2. I round it off to 1.4, la halacha. That 0.4, 4 tenths is 2/5. Now I don't have 1, I have 4. Now the square 4 by 4 is the minimal shear of the surface of a shear of a rishut hayachid. Fine. So now that means la halacha. I have to multiply that 4 times 1/5, which is actually 1.4. That gives me, for each tefach, it gives me an additional 1/5 of a tefach, and therefore I end up with 8 additional fifths, right? So, if that's the case, I'm left with 5 3/5 in order for me to be able to draw a circle around that square. I draw a circle around that square, if I measure the circle, is the diagonal of the square that's inscribed inside of it, really doesn't have to be 6, it only has to be 5 3/5 in order for me to be able to put the shear of the Rishut HaYachid inside. However, according to Rashi, what we're doing is we're rounding off L'chumra. So in other words, what happens is that we don't want to make it mutter for you that little. We'll say, well, you know, it's only going to be mutter if it's 6. If anything less, you're going to get into big trouble. Well, Maisi, you won't get into big trouble once it's over 5 3/5, right? But just to keep people out of trouble, we say 6. Tosfos learns, no, that's not the issue. The issue is that 6 includes the walls of the kaveret, and that the inside of the walls, once they're 5 3/5, are 6 from the outside. Now, this has everything to do with a lot of complicated sugyas, including the Kopik and Mahashvim that we had yesterday, and the question of whether if something from the outside is measured as a separate pursuit, what does that give it a din in its inside, and so on. Okay, these are issues that we discuss separately. But in any event, either to keep it simple, we're saying six, or to include the outside, we're saying six. We're now talking about two dimensions. Now let's move it to three dimensions. Okay. So once we're in three dimensions, we need to consider the height, obviously, because the shiur of Rishut HaYachid is going to be 10. Our kaveret is an upside-down cone. If it's 10 tefachim high, let's keep it simple. And I can measure the base of the cone as being 6 across the circle. Then I know that there's a square at that base, which is 4 by 4, which means that I've got a Rishut HaYachid here, which is enclosed by my kaver. How about, so let's take our first case. Zora kaver l'shut harabim, if it's 10, gavoa asara, but it's not rechava sheish, then it's a kli, because it does not have enough area in it to be reshut of its own, and therefore I threw a kli into reshut hayachid. So you'll say, well, what do you mean, but? I mean, isn't it? So what I have over here is a kli that I threw into reshut harabim from reshut hayachid. Forget it, I'm chay. Now, once it becomes rechava shisha, then I know that I can inscribe 4x4 in it. Now I'm potter, because I threw a reshut. So it never left itself. Rava Amar, Rava says, you're ignoring something, sir. Even if it's not Rechava Shisha, it's potter. Not because it's a Rishut, but because there's no way that this thing landed in Rishut HaRabim in its entirety. Why? Because a kaveret is a basket weave, and a basket weave always has little pieces that are sticking up beyond the main measurement, and that's a krumik shalkana. It's kind of a little piece of reed that's sticking out. If the thing itself is measured as 10, I guarantee you there's little pieces of the kana, the reeds that you made it out of, that are sticking up a little bit above. And therefore, Ef Shala Krumiot Shalkana Shloyalu Lamala Measara. So there's no way that it didn't have something that's sticking out. Now, how about if you don't throw it on its rounded part? You throw it on the facing downwards, that it looks like a real beehive. Kaveret is something that we use. The shape of it is built around the beehive kaveret. Obviously, we're not using it as a beehive. We're throwing bees in it. It's a type of container that has that shape. So now, if you indeed throw it upside down, now is the first time we care about which direction it's facing. Unless, of course, you're going like Rava's. Well, the pieces that are sticking out usually around the rim, so they're sticking upwards, fine. Now, as we're landing, we're getting into another problem, because if we land as a spaceship with our kaveret, so that means we're landing with the open end facing downwards, and now our force field is extending downwards from the edge of the round...
The broad base. From the edge of the broad base, which is...
There is no broad base.
There is no broad base.
Yeah, it's the rim. The rim extends downwards. The din is that lovud is a halacha in mechitza. Lovud is not a halacha in a base. So therefore, if this thing is landing on a sealed end, there's nothing to be malave, there's no mechitza. If, however, it's upside down and it's coming to rest, so let's now do it in slow motion. This thing is getting closer and closer to the ground. The moment that it gets to within 3 tvachim, we see a force field shooting out from the bottom and keeping it in mid-space, right? And now it's basically got a mechitza of asara, if it started off with 7+. If it's 7+, then lovud will seal up, because anything less than 3 is a force field connected to the ground. For all intents and purposes, it has stopped moving at that point. It is now munach. So halakhically speaking, it's munach once it gets to within 3 tefachim. Now, if it's 7 plus, a little tiny bit, then the entire thing landed within the Rishut HaRabim. But if it's 7.5, let's say, or more than 7+, a tiny little bit, then everybody would have to agree that at the point that it lands, its rear end is sticking up in the air, above 10 tefachim. Because Lovud made it land before it actually touches the ground.
And therefore the sides are stuck up in 3 tefachim.
And the moment it comes within 3 tefachim, the sides are stuck up in the air. Now the fact that you see it going down has nothing to do with its technical definition. It actually landed before. Now it's all over. But at the moment that it landed, it was munach. At that point, it was above Asarat Tvachim Rishus HaRabim. And therefore, it'll never be, in that case, chayev. So over there, once it's large enough, so at that point, there's no possible way for it to be chayev. Continues, therefore, Abaye's case, like this. How about if it's the other way around, kafa alpi? How about now if the rim is facing downwards? So if it's shiv'a umash, or if it's just a tiny bit more than seven tvachim, so then it's chayev, because when it lands, it's now in the Rishut HaRabim completely. If it's, however, sheva umechza, or any little bit beyond sheva b'masho, which is taking mechza as a meaning more than sheva b'masho, then you're potter, because once we say munach, it's above ten tvachim.
But it works
on mechitzas. That's why it has to say kaf al pia.
If
it would have been the other way around, it wouldn't have been mitlabed to the ground. This is Rashi's approach. Let's keep it simple, and we'll take this approach for now. Yeah? Ravashi Amar? Ravashi says, no. There's no lava here. Exactly for this reason. Why? Because even if it would be Sheva Mechzach, you'd be Chayev. My time, Mechitzot to Tochan Asuyot. You cannot compare this case to a wall. It's not a wall. It's the side of a container. Come on. Let's call a spade a spade. You can't take the side of a container where the meaning of it is to serve as something that prevents things from falling out of the container and pretend that it's actually there to be a Mechitza going up and down. It couldn't care less about up and down. And therefore, you don't say a concept of love without something that is not, in its essence, meant to be a wall.
A kaling?
It's not meant for its outside. It has no impact on the outside. What are we talking about over here? It's not. So as far as Rabbi Yaakov's question is concerned, does love always happen? Is it a fact of nature? Is there a force field that extends downward? No. Only where something is built to be an extension. This is not built to be an extension. This is built to service a content. And therefore, we would never say love it. Okay. So now this ends this particular issue, which has introduced us to a couple of very important yesodot, especially the one that arba larba is not a measure of surface area, but it's an actual measurement of 4x4, which you would need to inscribe into a circle of 5 3/5. Amar ula. Another halacha. Amud tisha b'Rishut HaRabim. Now normally, if I had a pole in the middle of Rishut HaRabim, once it was more than 3 tvachim high, if it wasn't 4x4, it would be a makom patur. The thing, however, says Ula, is that there is one particular point, and that is exactly 9 tvachim high. 9 tvachim high is perfectly positioned for people to use as a way to back up against and lean a backpack against. And because of that, an amud tisha is essentially a service area of the Rishut HaRabim itself. Since Rabim are b'chatfim ala, since they use this to position their pecs, and you did now a hanocha, you were zorek arba amot, and it was nach al gabav, so you'd say, okay, but I mean, so what if it was nach al gabav? I mean, this is not really part of the Rishut HaRabim. The halacha is not true. You're chayav. Why is this? Because let me explain to you. Let's take it from the ground, okay? Anything within 3 of the ground is, for all intents and purposes, part of the ground. It's something that people simply step on. So pachot mishloshav, it's less than 3 tvachim of the ground, midras dar svei rabbi, people simply walk over it. So it doesn't even register as a separate area, okay? From 3 until 9, that is an area in which it's too high to just step on. So low midras dar svei, but it's too low for you to use comfortably, so you will not balance anything on it. And you don't put your thing on it either. And therefore, it's not considered to be part of the Rishut HaRabim. Once it's tish'a, then vaday mitchatfim aliyu, that is something people use, and therefore, being as it's a usage of the Rishut HaRabim, it becomes bottle to the Rishut HaRabim, and we don't care how it is measured. Is this true about a guma as well? In other words, does it matter if it's convex or concave? Something that people will store their things into. So let's say I have an area that I can put my backpack into. Forget about balancing it on this amud. Normally I would say, if there's a hole in the Rishut HaRabim, okay, I'll start my measuring process. If it's 10 deep and 4x4, it's Rishut HaYachid. If it's less than 10 deep and 4x4, it's a karmeli. If it doesn't have the 4x4, it's a makom patur, and so on. That's what normally I would do. You're telling me that there's a new concept called usage of B'nai Rishut HaRabim, in which if something is convenient to use, it doesn't register as a different Rishut. It's simply part of the Rishut HaRabim. Does that work even if I have to bend down to use it? Obviously, it's a different kind of use. It's not for Ketifa, but it's for hiding things, making sure that I can find it when I get back later, or that nobody's going to step on it, because it's inside of a hole.
Bar bitachon.
Yeah, exactly, bar bitachon. So what would be the din of a guma? Said Rabbi Yosef to him, Amarle, it's exactly the same. V'chein beguman. The Tosfos understands it exactly the same. Clearly can't mean nine particularly, because if it's less than nine, it's even easier to use. Bishleim, if you're talking about balancing a backpack, I understand it needs to be a particular height. If you're talking about a guma, why the heck would it be the inversion of the pole? It doesn't make any sense. So it would mean anything up to nine we'd be talking about. That's still comfortable to use. Fine. Rava says, no, it doesn't work in that direction. Beguma lo, and I'll tell you why. Not that I deny that people use this. People use it, but it's uncomfortable. Bending down like that is uncomfortable. You use it because you're forced into using it. It's the exact opposite of the Amud Tisha, which the whole point of it is that it's very comfortable and it's a natural use. And therefore, this is called Tashmish Ayde Atchak. This is where you're pressured, you'll use it. That's not called a natural usage. Lav Shmei Tashmish. And therefore, I disagree. This works in comfort zones. It doesn't work out of comfort zones. Yes, Abba?
How do you carry a backpack on Shabbat?
It's nothing to do with carrying it on Shabbat. You carry it when you need to carry it.
But are we talking about Shabbat situation?
Yes, but the Rishut HaRabim is not defined by Shabbat. Rishut HaRabim is defined by the usage of this area. You're not carrying a backpack on Shabbat. Is this Rishut HaRabim or not, is the question. You shouldn't be carrying it at all. But you are. You're in Rishut HaRabim. Did I put it down in Rishut HaRabim, or is it in Ramakam Ptur? It's in Rishut HaRabim. What defines Rishut HaRabim? The way people use it, when they're supposed to be using it. Yeah. Eitvei Ravada Bar Matna L'Rava. So now we're going to go off a little bit on a tangent. In other words, right now we have a standing question of whether Tashmish Ayidei Atchak is considered to be Tashmish or not, and we're going to be getting back to this. But first, we want to ask some questions on Rava, not conceptual questions, but questions from cases that seem to say the opposite. And here we have a braita that runs like this. Haitako pato munachat Rishut HaRabim. Somebody has a chest in Rishut HaRabim, and this is such a large chest that it is big enough to be a Rishut HaYachid. And it doesn't take all that much. It's Gavoa Asaraz, it's 10 Tefachim high, so it's about a meter high. And it's Rechava Arba. Now that makes it a Rishut HaYachid. I don't care where it is. Ein metatali lo mitocha l'Rishut HaRabim, v'lo m'Rishut HaRabim metocha. You cannot carry from one into the other. But once it's less than that minimal size, whether in height or in width, then you can effectively ignore it. Why? Isn't it a carmelite or isn't it a makom patur? No, because as we said earlier, kelim do not become a reshut to themselves in Rishut HaRabim. So therefore, if it's pachot mikan, you got no problem. Mitalton. And by the way, v'chein beguma, that would be exactly the same thing if it was a guma. Oh, does that not say to you that if you've got a guma in Rishut HaRabim that is less than 4 or less than 10, you don't have to worry about carrying from the Rishut HaRabim into the guma? That's what it said. Exactly the opposite of what Rava said. Therefore, you see that Rabbi Yosef was right, and it doesn't matter whether this is on top of the Rishut HaRabim or extending downward under the Rishut HaRabim. It's exactly the same. My lava is safe. I mean, that's a natural way of reading the bright, isn't it? V'chein beguma. No, says Rava. It's referring to the reisha. That in the event that you have a guma that is 10 by 4, then it's Rishut HaYachid. That's all that it's saying. It is not saying that you're allowed to use a guma. A guma is not comfortable to use, and therefore it's not the same as a box, which is neither a carbolet or a makom patur. That seems a little bit strange to insist that it's referring to the reisha. Okay, I have another question for you, Rav. Anything. Now, before we start this, we need to remember what the din is of an Eruv Tichumim. Somebody wants to walk out of town on Shabbat beyond the requisite tchum, which is the 2,000 amot. So what does he do? He can create a mokom shvita by putting down an Eruv all the way up to the end of whatever direction he wants to go and up to that 2,000 amot. And in that place is considered to be where it is that he was for Shabbat. So then he starts counting 2,000 amot from that point. However, it is absolutely essential that he have access to his Eruv on Shabbat. So for some reason he can't have access to it. Let's say his Eruv is in a different reshut and he would never be able to bring it into where he supposedly is eating. Or the door is locked and there's no key or whatever. If he does not have access to it, it's not a kosher Eruv. Now, somebody goes ahead, he wants to be shoveit, and he has in mind, here's my makom shvita right under this tree. And the Rishut HaRabim. Richie has some good experience with this.
Still now rotting.
V'niach Eruvo bebor. Lemala miyasara tvachim, eruvo eruv. Lemata miyasara tvachim, ing eruvo eruv. He's got a pit. He puts his Eruv into this pit. Now, if it's 10 Tfachim high, we're going to explain what that means in a moment, then it's okay. But if it's below 10 Tfachim, it's not okay. Now, first I need to understand the case. Hey, tell me. Are you talking about that the pit has 10 Tfachim? If you're talking about that the pit has 10 Tfachim in it, so then what would be the meaning of Lamal? So if the pit itself has 10 Tfachim, that means the pit's a Rishut HaYachid. Now you're talking about you put it on a stool at the bottom, that was 10 Tfachim high. What do I care? I don't care where you put it. It's in Rishut HaYachid, for God's sake. How are you going to be able to take it out of Rishut HaYachid into Rishut HaRabim? So and then when you're using the word Lamala, you mean the Dalei V'Otfei, you put it up high on a stool, and Lamata means that you put it on the bottom, the Tatoi V'Otfei. Who cares? Mali Lamala, Mali Lamala. I don't care if it's on the higher part, the lower part. It's in Rishut HaYachid. Once that pit is 4x4 and it's 10 Tvachim, it's Rishut HaYachid. Hu b'mokom echad, eruvo b'mokom acheru. Forget it. It's not a kosher eruv. Okay, so it's got to be talking about a boar that does not have 10 Tfachim. You see where I'm going, Rava, don't you? So here you are in a Rishut HaRabim. You've got your Erev in a pit that does not have 10 Tfachim, and it says your Erev is a kosher Erev. Now, why is your Erev a kosher Erev? Because you're allowed to take it out of that pit into Rishut HaRabim. That's why. Why? Because Rav Yosef is right, Rava. That's why. Because using something, even though it's bending down and a little inconvenient, leaves it as part of the Rishut HaRabim. QED. Ah. You see that it's considered to be the same. Rava always answered it. And he answered it in different ways, which is weird. It's like I'm looking to answer something. I mean, why not just accept that you're wrong? We're always looking for these answers. The Gemara's going to ask that. Zinin Mishani, like, so sometimes he would answer when people would ask him this question. It's not a problem. The bar is a Carmelite. And in a case where he and his Eruv is both in a Carmelite, and he wasn't in Rishut HaRabim. What do you mean he wasn't in Rishut HaRabim? It says Rishut HaRabim. No, I'm high Carmelite Rishut HaRabim. You know why? It means it's not a Rishut HaYachid. That's what it meant. Levisha ain't a Rishut HaYachid. Sometimes he would answer that. Other times he would answer Vizimna Mishanele. Well, he's in the Rishut HaRabim. His Erev is inside of a bar, which is a Carmelite, and nonetheless it's kosher. You know why? Because it's going according to Rebbe, and Rebbe says, Kol davar shehu mishum shvut, a Carmelite, after all, is only the Rabbanon. The Rabbanon, where it goes, they're Ben Hashmashot. And the deal is, you only have to have access to your Erev at the instant of Shabbat's coming in. That's Ben Hashmashot. So that means, by definition, you did have theoretical access at that moment. And therefore, you were Kona your Mokum Shvita, you'll never be able to eat your Erev. So what? So what? But theoretically, the moment of Knisata Shabbat, I was Kona my Mokum Shvita, and therefore, Lo Gozrel of Bin Hashmashot. Now, I know, says Rabbi, I know you think I've been stubborn about this, but you're wrong. Lo Tema Dechuya Mokum Dechina Lecha. Don't tell me, why do you keep pushing us off instead of biting the bullet and acknowledging that you're wrong? Because Dafka Kamina Lecha. I'm telling you this because I know I'm right. And I'll show you how I know I'm right from the Mishnah. That's not. In Haya, now this is a very, very strange, repetitive Mishnah, which reads as follows. In Haya Rekakmayim, there's a puddle of water with a Rishut HaRabim going straight through this massive puddle. So the Rishut HaRabim is Ma'alechet Bo. If somebody throws Arba Amot in the Rishut HaRabim, despite the fact that it's in this puddle, he's Chayef. Okay? And what do I mean by a puddle? Kamu Rekakmayim? It's got to be less than 10 fucking deep. If it's 10 Tfachim deep, then it's no longer part of the Rishut HaRabim. So far, so good. Rava says, now here's where it gets interesting. Take out the vav, there's no vav there. Rekak mayim, Rishut HaRabim alechet bo. Does that sound familiar? Yeah, we just said that. The Mishnah continues, repeating the case word for word. A rekak mayim, that Rishut HaRabim is ma'alechet bo, hazorek v'tocho arba amot chaya. Now, I understand. Did somebody just press paste twice when they were doing the editing here? So Bishlam, okay, look, I can explain away the fact that the author of the Mishnah wants to say the word rekak twice. Because, you know what? I could have thought that it is defined by seasons. And therefore, I need to know, I don't care about the season. So chad b'yemot ha'chama, v'chad b'yemot ha'gishamim, v'tzricha. I need to know this, because let's say I would have had a case that was referring to one rekak. I could say, okay, maybe that's yemot ha'chama. And why would a Rishut HaRabim continue into a puddle in yemot ha'chama, because people don't mind getting their toesies a little bit chilled if they've been walking during the summer. They say, ah, great, I'll walk right through the puddle because my toesies are killing me.
It's unusual
in the summer. You have over here something flooded, so great, I don't mind walking. It's like walking along the beach, and I'm not in my bathing suit, but still I'd like to get my toes wet, so I'll walk around the edge. So over there, okay, I've eaten inch liquor, really not shy. People will go through a puddle because they don't mind cooling off. But I'm certainly in the emotion. I mean, I'm freezing. Are you crazy? I'm going to get my feet wet in the middle of the winter. Maybe then we would say, look, I mean, you can't call a puddle a Rishut HaRabim. Who's going to walk through a puddle? On the other hand, let's say I would have known you were Yimot HaGeshamim. I would say, you know what? People walking in Yimot HaGeshamim are full of mud. Did you ever walk through water when you're full of mud? Of course. Your bedafka will stick something into water to wash it off. So, I don't mind getting... But anyway, I'm a filthy mess. I mean, remember what roads were like in those days. So, I'm perfectly happy walking through the puddle of Yimot HaGeshamim. But Yimot HaChama, where I'm perfectly clean, when I'm going to now get wet, and I'm going to start walking and get all muddy, I'm not going to get wet. So, maybe. So it depends. I would think that maybe we could make this argument. So, Yashmin and Yimot HaGeshamim, Agav the Matnif, because I'm so dirty, Makri Benachi, that happens if people walk through a puddle. Avo Yimot HaChama, maybe not. Okay. So, therefore, Tzricha, I need to have Rekak mentioned twice. But I don't understand that excuse for mentioning the entire case twice. Why do you keep on going? So let me tell you, says Rava, why. Because if I repeat the words Ma'alechet Betocha, I think you're getting the message loud and clear. What defines a Rishut HaRabim is where people walk through it, not where they use it. So this is a puddle. Are you going to tell me it's a comfortable usage? No. It's Ayudei Atchak. People don't like walking through puddles. They will walk through the puddle. So you'll say, ah, so that's the case. People don't like bending down into a bore either, but they will. Correct. And that's exactly why it repeats Ma'alecha twice. To tell you, you know when we're ready to talk about doing things that are not comfortable and still including them within the rubric of Rishut HaRabim? When we're talking about walking through, because that's the essence of the Rishut HaRabim. But if we're talking about bending down and using something, Tashmish HaYidei HaTchak, forget about it. So therefore it's an insight. Elahilo says, Rabbi, how do you explain the fact that I repeat the case of Halicha twice? Explain that, Lamalim. El Allah, the whole point of the Mishnah, is to teach me that me, Rava, is right. The essence of Rishut HaRabim, which is for moving through, yes. But Tashmish HaYidei HaTchak, to bend down and put my backpack in a bar, that is not considered to be the Tashmish, to turn a bar into a Rishut HaRabim. Shmamin, I think that conclusively proves it, and that's why I'm being so stubborn about explaining away things, even though it sounds like I'm not ready to bite the bullet. That's because the bullet shouldn't be bit. I'll review it. Yeah.
In the case,
so now we're
saying, but the bor is less than a sar tefachim. So where did he put it?
No, that, now we're saying that asara defines the bor.
But the bor is less than a sar tefachim, do you?
If it's lamal me asar tefachim, that means that it's less than a sar tefachim. If it's more, then it's more. So if it's not a sar tefachim.
Oh, so lamara means.
That's why we changed. We said, is it referring to the bor is given? Another question, where in the bor?
So the bor has.
No, that doesn't make sense.
Means let anywhere in the bor, but it's not, because it's not.
Right, because it's not. Okay, now, the next case would be a different concept of non-hanocha, which we've already seen, really, where you still are holding on to one edge of something. So here you've got a pile of sticks, and they're a long pile. What do? You don't lift up the whole pile. You flip them. So you're holding one end, you flip it over. Then you take the other end, you flip it over, but you never picked up the whole thing. So you never did a complete akira. Therefore, says Rabbi, the high zeros of the kani, you've got a long pile of reeds. Rama vizakfe, picking up one end and flipping it over, you're never going to be chayim until you pick up the whole thing out of akale. Very good. So now we've established these questions of shimush within the Rishut HaRabim. The last case that we had left was the strange case of the threshold. So now, a liminal space, very modern. So now, what is the concept of this threshold? You said, you left it very open, you didn't give me any measurements, all you said was, the fourth Rishut. Adamo Meidala Skupa. There you are on the lintel. No tell me ba'alabayit, v'no tein lo. You can take something from the hands of a ba'alabayit in the house, or you can hand him something. You can take from an ani who's standing out in the street, and you can hand him something. No tell me, I'll even no tein lo, and so on. Now, Can you explain to me what this Escufa looks like? What are we referring to? Are you standing at the edge of a mudway, let's say? You're at the edge of an alleyway. Now, we know that the alleyways, of course, in order to carry within the alleyway, you needed to have a Korah or a Lechi. We're talking about where one end of the alley was closed. It's a dead end. And you're at the entrance to the alley. So you're still in the Rishut HaRabim. I mean, unless you're literally inside the alleyway, in which case it doesn't matter. So then that means you're sitting on Skufat Rishut HaRabim. So I understand. How could you possibly take something from the Baal HaBayit? Baal HaBayit is standing inside the alley. That's Rishut HaYachid. He's going to hand something to you. You're standing in Rishut HaRabim. Suddenly you're carrying from Rishut HaYachid to Rishut HaRabim. So it can't be that case. Okay. Are we talking about that the Askufa is a Rishut HaYachid? So it's within the door space, let's say, huh? And now the Ani can hand you something when you're in the door space? I don't get it. So then you're carrying, how can you be Notam and Ani? You're carrying from Rishut HaRabim to Rishut HaYachid. Ella what? You're telling me, well, you know, it's not big enough to be Rishut HaYachid. It's only a Karmeliot. And therefore, it's not ten tefachim. Since it's not ten tefachim high, even though it's 4x4, so then it's okay. What do you mean it's okay? I thought a Karmeliot is usher in both directions. How could it be okay? So if it's a Kayim, see, you're not Kayim. But how can you say, no telva, no tela chathiyo, like you're allowed to carry from a Karmelit into either Rishut HaYachid or Rishut HaRabim? I'd say you're not Chayev, but so Isurim Yayitim, isn't that the whole point of a Karmelit? That the Rabbanan said it's usher to do that? So it can't be a Karmelit either. Ella, ha! We're introducing clearly the fourth dimension. And what is that? No space. The Makom Petur itself. This Askuf is a Makom Petur be'alma. And what made that happen? It doesn't have 4x4. Since it doesn't have 4x4, it doesn't register as a space. This is the klal that Rabbi Yochanan was quoted as saying. Any space which does not measure arba al arba tefachim is a no space. And therefore, it's mutter for B'nai Rishut HaYachid to put things on. It's mutter for B'nai Rishut HaRabim to be mekatef alav, as long as they don't flip from one rishus to the other. In other words, don't play games. You want to get from inside the house to the streets. You'll say, okay, I'm putting it down on my little Mokum Tour. All right. Then someone else or me, I'll walk out the street. Okay, I'll take something off of a Mokum Tour. Looky, looky. So I'm doing everything okay. That the Rabbanan asked, not that it's really awesome. The Rabbanan asked it because it's too easy to come to, well, why not just skip over it, you know. Once we can do it, we might as well just do it straight. So therefore they asked it. As long as they don't exchange the spaces of the Rishut HaYachid and Rishut HaRabim, which basically is what we said. Amar Mar, that's exactly the point. As long as you don't transfer from one rishut to the other, but even if you did, all three would be potter. The guy standing on the Askufa, the guy in the Rishut HaRabim, the guy in the Rishut HaYachid, nobody did an act of Otzah at all. What? But wait a minute. There's another problem in this, which makes Rava again, not that Rava, but there's another Rava. Lemetavit Yuftir Rava. Does that not disprove Rava? The Omar Rava Amavir Chefetz, Mitchilat Arba Lesofar Arba, Rishut HaRabim, a guy lifts his hand up, walks with his hand above 10 foot, and he says, look, I'm carrying in a Makom Ptur. I'm not carrying Rishut HaRabim, gentlemen, please, I never do that. But, you know, I do have to walk 3 blocks with my talit. So I'm just holding it above the tefachim, carrying it to the other end of Rishut HaRabim, and I'm putting it down 3 blocks later. So what did I do? I carried through a Makom Ptur. There's no issue carrying through a Makom Ptur. Now that's this case. Looky, looky. Here's my talit. I got to get into my house. Chashom, I don't carry on Shabbat. I'm putting it down on a Makom Ptur. Oh, looky, looky. I'm taking it out of the Makom Ptur and putting it into my house. Didn't do anything wrong. But Rava says you're chayev. And we said that you're not chayev. We said you shouldn't do it. I'd explain that. So if you do it, Derek love your chayev. Answer to the was obvious what the difference is. Over here, the chayev stopped. It was munach on the Makom Ptur. Over there was never munach on the Makom Ptur. You were carrying it the whole time. And all you were pretending was that it was in the Makom Ptur. But in reality, there was no hanukkah in the Makom Ptur. You pick something up out of Rishut HaRabim, and you put it down in a different Rishut HaRabim, outside of Arba Amot. So you're chayev. So hatam lo nach, hacha nach. And that is your difference. You're telling me, well, what about the Makom Arba Al Arba? Then I was apparently Rav Chisda Zag Rebbe. Tetanya Zarak Benachal Gaviziz Koshu Rebbe Mechayev Vechachamim Potrim. I'm Rebbe, no, Bershut HaYachid Rebbe. Rav Chisda Rav Kuli Amlo Kuli Get Rav Chisda. Hoch, we're talking about you didn't land in Rishut HaYachid. You landed on a branch of an Ilan that was all made for Rishut HaYachid and no foe was no to Rishut HaRabim. And it was Zohar Menachanov folk. There's a new machlokis over there. Rebbe over there holds that we say Shbina Fo Batari Karo even to define what Rishut it's in. And the Rabbanan say, you don't say that. It doesn't change what Rishut it's in. Lo Aminin Shbina Fo Batari Karo. Oh Rabbi, Zarak Kaveret Rishut Rabbi. Gavoa Asara. Veina Rechava Shisha Chaya. Rechava Shisha, because then it's 4x4, Patur. Really, according to Rashi, 5 3/8. According to Tosfos, this includes the measurement of the wall. Rav Amar, afilu ein rechava shisha patur, because you always have at least a krumiot shalkana that is sticking up above the basket, and therefore it's impossible shelo yalu lamala miasara. Now kafa al pia. So then, if it's shiva umashu, so then when love would kicks in, it's still entirely within 10 tefachim. You're chayek. Shiva v'mechza, your potter. Obviously referring to less than 6, because otherwise, on the contrary, it will be a reshut. Rava shamar, afilu sheva u'mechza chayav maitaima, mechitzot etochana suyod. Omer ula, amud tisha, reshut rabim, v'rabim mechatvim alav, zorak v'nech agabav chayav maitaima, פחות משלושת מדרש דרסלי רב, משלושת תשעה לא מדרש דרסלי ולא כתובים מחתך. But Tisha is just the right height for Vare Mechatfim Ulayhu. Omele Abayel Rav Yosef. And what about a Guma? Omele, it's the same thing. It's used. Rav Amar, no. A Guma, not. Why? It's not comfortable to use. And Tashmish Ayideh Atchak, Lav Shmei Tashmish. Eitve Rav Adabar Matan L'Rava. Haytar Kupato Munachat Rishut Rabim Gavu Asra Rechava Arbaim Metalti Lo Mitocha Rishut Rabim Velo Rishut Rabim Latocha Pachot Bikein Metalti Lin. And here are the crucial words, Rava. V'chein Beguma Mar Lava Seifa, that it's mutter. No. Aresha, if it's dead, it's usher. Oh, man. Anyway, how about this? Netkavim Mishpot Rishut Rabim Hiniach Eruvot Bebor. If it's a Malam Yasrat Vachim Eruvay Eruv. If it's a Malam Yasrat Vachim Eruvay Eruv. Now, explain that to me. Ekdami. Oh, we talk about the Bor for sure on Asara. And when we say Lamala, we mean it was the Daloi Veotfe. Lamata means it was Tatoi Veotfe. What do I give a hang? Mali Lamala, Mali Lamala. The bottom line is, your Arabs in a different Rishot. I'll tell you what it means. It's a Bor that doesn't have Asara. So you see that a Bor, not Asara, even though it's Tashmish Ayideh Atchak, is part of the Rishut HaRabba, and Shmei Tashmish. So sometimes Rav Zinyan Mishani Lai, well, he wasn't really in Rishut HaRabba, he was also in a Carmelite. And it means Huve Ruva v'Carmelite. I know it says Rishut HaRabba, but it doesn't mean Rishut HaRabba. Am I currently Rishut HaRabba, v'fishet Rishut HaYakib? Or other times Rava would say, you know what? He is in the Rishut Rabim. His Eruv is in the Karbalit, but so what? It's going on Libra Rebbe, who holds called Avar Shemishim Shvut, Lo Gozru Alav Ben Ashvashot. Yeah, I know you guys think I'm pushing you off, but Lo Teim Duchuyim Kabat Chanin Alacha. I'm telling you, it's got to be bad. You know why? It's not. Ima yarek hakmai rishut harabim v'alechet bo azorek v'toch arba avot chaya v'kamo rekak mayim pochot mi'asrat fachim rekak mayim rishut harabim v'alechet bo azorek v'tocho arba avot chaya. Now, I'll explain the repetition. So bishlam rekak rekak, fine, trace in name. That's because I need to know chad b'vot hachama, chad b'vot hakshamim, and I need each one. Because tricha, yashmin b'vot hachama, I would say, yeah, okay, I've been in really not shy. It's hot out there. Abba b'vot hakshamim, it's cold out there. Emolo, yashmin b'vot hakshamim. I would say, agav the mitem, I'm filthy, it's a makrim v'nochit. But b'vot hachama, I don't want to get wet and then get muddy. So maybe not, therefore tricha. But I explain the fact that it repeats the whole thing about Rishut HaRabim, mitalechet betocha. Hiluch, hiluch, trezim, ilomali, elolav, shmamina. Only hiluch, that's the point. Hiluch ayideyatchak shmei hiluch, but tashmish ayideyatchak, lav shmei tashmish, shmamina. Om revira hayzeriza dekani, Roma v'zakve, lomachayev, ad akar like completely. Oh, my mind. Getting back to our four Rishiyot. Adam made Allah skufa, not only balabayat, and otelo, not only ani, even otelo na. Explain to me, what is this askufa and askufa of? Is it an askufa of Rishut HaYachid? So then, did I skip? How can it be not to me balabayit? It's being mafid Rishut HaKadosh Rabbim. Ella, what is the askufa from within that doorway of Rishut HaYachid? How can it be not to be on? He's being combined Rishut HaRabbim, Rishut HaYachid. Ella, is it an askufa karmali? How can it be not to 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 be Hela, this is introducing a new concept of a makom p'tur. So it's a school for makom p'tur be alma. And what would define that? To go into let be arba al arba. That's all that's left us. V'fiyad v'fiyad Rav Dimyam Rav Yochanan a makom shen ba arba al arba t'vachim is always mutter. So it's mutter l'vnei Rishut HaYachid. It's mutter l'vnei Rishut HaRabim l'katef alav, as long as they don't play a little game of taking from one Rishut to the other. Belvat shelo yachlifu. Omer Bar, like you said there too. Belvat shelo you told me balabayit v'natein la'ani, mi'ani v'natein la balabayit. But if you did, what's the deal? Im natal v'natan shloshtan p'turin. Oh, wow, lemetavati of the Rava. Because here you're carrying through a makom p'tur, and it says you're potter. But Rava says that a mavir chefetz b'tchilat arba'a, l'sof arba'a n'rishut rabim, even though you keep your hand stuck above ten tfak, which is a makom p'tur, she'eviro derech alav, nonetheless you'd be chayev. Yeah, no comparison. Hatam lo nach, hacha nach.
Rosh Chodesh of Iyar. Your Aleph. So yesterday we learned that according to Rav Chisda, Na'at Tanav Rishut HaYachid Bezarak B'nach HaGavav, Afilu Gavoa Me'a Amach Hayah B'nach Rishut HaYachid Ola Adarakiyah. Yesterday we brought in Agav, the Halacha, in which Shmuel said, I don't want to hear anything about above 10 Tvachim. So we're trying to figure out, you don't want to hear anything about 10 Tvachim vis-a-vis what? Vis-a-vis Rishut HaYachid. Certainly Rishut HaYachid, you can be happy to hear above 10 Tvachim because Rishut HaYachid continues upward Adarakiyah. So that can't be what you meant. How do we know that? Because then we bring in Rav Chisda. And this was a little bit tangential. But, I mean, now that we brought it up, but don't we also have a problem here, again, of the issues of, Mokum Arba Arba? It seems to ignore that completely. Here, Rav Chisda said, if you have a pole in Rishut HaYachid, let's say you have it in your yard, you have a pole sticking up, somebody throws a chepetz from Rishut HaRabim and it lands on that pole, doesn't matter how high the pole is, even if it's 100 amos high, you're chayav. Why? Because Rishut HaYachid continues to go up ad infinitum. So, Leimer Rav Chisda Dorma Karabi. Are we forced to say that Rav Chisda agrees with Rebbe who doesn't hold, as we saw earlier, the din of requiring arba al arba? By the way, somebody took the website and put it up on the radio. If you want to talk about needing to be careful about the Midas Hayom, yes, radio station in Lakewood of all places.
Who else was still there, right?
Anyway, we'll talk about it later. But God help us. Sorry for the interruption. They woke me up at literally 2 in the morning about this. I have the password to say 2 o'clock in the morning. Some Rabbanim Paskin that Divrei Torah can be stolen because they don't belong to the person. Okay, once they're out there, they're in the public, they belong to the public. Apparently, he holds a Rebbe. We saw before that Rebbe doesn't seem to require, because of the case we just spoke about, Zarak Vinach HaGaviziz Koshul, something lands on a little shelf. So Rebbe said that the Dimbu thought at this point that it's talking about in Rishut HaYachid. So it would be similar to what the Chisda was saying. And Rebbe was mechayev, even though it landed on a small shelf. Where's the arba al arba? The chachamim potrim. Omer Abaye, this is a misconception, says Abaye. The issue of whether something lands on a small extension is not talking about a case in which we were throwing from Rishut HaRabim to Rishut HaYachid. Actually, what Rebbe was referring to, and what the chachamim were arguing, was a reference to a case which we spoke about earlier, again, just tangentially, in which we're talking about Hakabi Ilan HaOmed Rishut HaYachid, V'nofo notel Rishut HaRabim. The question over here was about someone who was throwing Arba Amud Rishut HaRabim, not into Rishut HaYachid. But what it landed on was a branch. Now, normally a branch, it's not 4x4. However, since this branch is on a tree, which is on the ground, so it's considered to be a mokamar balar. A shaila is, the reason that we thought it was nogeru shetayachin is because the ilan whose trunk the branch extended from, the trunk was actually in Rishut HaYachid. The issue here not being whether that trunk can draw you into Rishut HaYachid, even though you're standing in Rishut HaRabim, that's not the point. The question is whether the trunk in Rishut HaYachid qualifies to consider the branch that's in the middle of the air in Rishut HaRabim to be munaf on the ground. Or do we say you can't be munaf on the ground because you're in a place of a different Rishus, where the source of the munaf on the ground is in another Rishus? It doesn't make any sense. But there's nothing to do with the requirement of Arba Larva. You definitely require a mokum of Arba Larva. Or perhaps in Rishut HaYachid, you definitely don't require a mokum Arba Larva. It's simply irrelevant to us here. And what they're arguing about is that Rebbe Sabra Amrina Shtin Nofo Batari Karo. That despite the fact that the Ikar is in a different Rishut, we are able to view the branch as being at rest as a mokum Arba Larva because of the fact that it's attached to something which is securely on the ground. And that's sufficient. Rabbanan don't accept that you can say something in a different rishus. You provide the anchoring for a branch that's holding in the middle of the air in Rishut HaRabim. What does that have to do with the question of Rav Chisda at all? There is a lashon in Rashi according to which Rav Chisda is neither like Rebbe or the Rabbanan, which is problematic because it would appear that it's irrelevant within a Rav Chisda. Now, Marshall explains that what Rashi is trying to say is that if Rav Chisda was correct, and there would be no din of Arba al Arba in Rishut HaYachid, then of what value and significance would the trunk in Rishut HaYachid be when such trunk isn't defined as a Mokum Arba al Arba because in Rishut HaYachid there's no such concept? That's a very difficult explanation. But in any way, there you go. That's how far afield we have to go in order to be able to understand what Rashi is saying. The Pashtut, the two questions are unrelated. Rav Chisda is talking about Rishut HaYachid. He's saying that there's no din of Hanacha, Mokum Arba, Rishut HaYachid. That's what it appears to be saying. Not necessary. Rebbe and the Rabbonin are arguing about something else entirely in Rishut HaRabim, whether Shetin Nofo Batari Karo. Now, Tosfos says this whole thing doesn't make any sense because it would be better for us, if that's the point, it would be better for us to have a Machloker, Rebbe and the Rabbonin. Remember, this is an alternative. It's also a rather far-fetched alternative that Abaya is given. What presses Abaya into saying that the Machlokas Rebbe Rabbanan is about this weird case of a nof that's sticking into another Rishus? Only the fact that it's outrageous to believe that Rav Chisda would have gotten involved in a Machloket and not simply identified a Shita and so on. I mean, if you want to say that Rishut HaYachid is Ola Adarak, yes, say so. No, it's just bizarre, Hakona, and so on. I mean, obviously, he's addressing the requirement for Hanacha. And so this pushes now Abaya into that position. Says Tosis, that's a crazy thing to do. Because if it's true now that Rav Chisda comes out talking about something that neither Rebbe or Rabbanan were discussing at all, he ends up telling us something that is unsupported by any Tana. Because there's definitely a Braita later that says that you do need Mokum Arba al Arba and Rishut HaYachid. And the Gemara is going to bring it up here. It would be much better to allow it to be a Machloket Tanaim, and Rav Chisda would be following one Shita, a Machloket Tanaim, than to try to help him out over here by making things worse for him and saying he doesn't hold of any time and they all disagree with him. That doesn't make any sense. Therefore, Tosfos says, perhaps Rav Chisda has not said you don't need a mokum arba al arba bichlal in Rishut HaYachid. He's talking about you don't need a mokum arba al arba where you have an enclosed Rishut HaYachid. Just like we had the idea before of Rebbe Shita, that if you have a house, it's Kamandim al Yadamya. Perhaps Rav Chisda holds the din of Kamandim al Yadamya doesn't require even a roof for the house. But it does require an enclosure. Suppose you would have, for instance, a similar case where something lands now on top of a wall, and the wall was now Mechalik Rishut L'Atzmo because it's 10 Tfachim high and 4x4. So now it became Rishut HaYachid. Would even in that case, if you put a pole on top of that wall, would he also say that you don't need Mokum Arba al Arba? No, because there's no enclosure. There's nothing to define. The area is filled. So where I anyway have to imagine the space of Rishut HaYachid, how do I imagine the space of Rishut HaYachid? I draw an imaginary line up from the four mechitzas around this space. And I say, this space, what space? The space that we are defining by these coordinates around it. And we're starting now our measurement from point zero. Ah, okay, so then if that's the case, this entire space is one entity. Inside that space, you don't need a Anocha and a Mokum Arba al Arba. Fine. But it doesn't mean he disagrees with the Yesod of Arba al Arba if you don't have that additional quality. And therefore, if it would come, let's say, alakot, or get the cases that we have, which is the case later. Remember, of course, Christa would be moda that the idea of Arba Larva is still true. He's only saying that this is Arba Larva. And then it would make sense for the Gemara not to save him from a machloket of Rebbe and Rabban. Okay? So really, we've talked about many different varieties of this issue, of the Arba al Arba issue. We have the idea of Kluta Kamisha Lunchadam as the ultimate. Even when you're literally moving through space, you're not at present at all. We nonetheless take into consideration your registration in that space, Kluta. We had another halacha that spoke about that Mahalach Ka'emed. Mahalach Ka'emed would mean that there was always an Amida for all intents and purposes, because you were walking, but that wouldn't apply to Sorin. That's not the same as Kluta Kamisha Lunchadam. We had the idea of Beta Kamanda Malia Damya, which obviously can only be true in Rishut HaYachin, because you can't have Rishut HaRabim Mikoran. We had the idea of Chashiva Le, such as Yodah Shaladam Chashiva Le, Kamokam Arba Al Arba. This is a new halacha, in which either we're saying there's no requirement of Arba Al Arba Rishut HaYachin, which is mind-boggling, since it seems to contradict what we know to be true from later, or there's an idea, Stosis is suggesting, as Rishut HaYachin as an enclosed space, is Kamanda Malia Damya even without it being Rishut HaRabbi Mikura. But only vis-a-vis this halacha, not the way that Rebbe was saying before, that even if a baseball flies through the living room window and goes out, it would be Kamanda Malyadam. Kamanda Malyadam is there, in fact, to say that you need Mikura. That's like a fuse of two issues. But he's not saying it's at rest when it's not at rest. He's just saying when it is at rest, it's at rest in the entire space. And therefore, you have to consider Arba Larva on the top of the pole. So this is a completely new issue. We never spoke about such an idea earlier, okay? So the idea of Arba Larva and the concepts of Akira and Anocha are becoming more and more detailed. Well, of course, there's more to come. We're just at the start of this long and arduous, happy journey. So, okay, let's just, let's be collate that and continue. Omer Abai. Now here we get to a really curious concept. If somebody drives from Rishus HaRabim to Rishus HaYochid, is he chayav on moving the car?
Carport, from the street to
this
carport?
Yes, and vice versa. Now, the question over here, of course, would be whether the car is considered to be a reshut, because the car itself is a reshut. So is moving a reshut from one reshut into another reshut an act of hotza'ah, or is such a thing an impossibility? Because whatever the reshut is, it carries itself with it, so we shouldn't consider the meaning of a space within another space as being a transference of a space, because we always look at the local space. And this is the question that we need to raise today. The case of the Gemara, however, is not a case of a car, it's a case of a spaceship. And we have a spaceship.
No, the case we had before about the nut on the sailboat is also this issue,
no? No, the nut on the sailboat wasn't the reshut. It was only in terms of rest. Is something at rest locally, or is it something at rest in terms of the space in which the thing that it's at rest on? Here we're talking about the reshut that the space is changed, right? That's the question. So here you have, here our Gemara is interesting, and because we already know from yesterday, so you, that our aliens are very small. Raya, the house that they forced you to build was less than 10 foot high. So we were talking about very small aliens.
It was a mansion.
It turns out it was more than a mansion. It was the equivalent of a Beis HaMikdash. Because the spaceship of these guys was really less than 10 tefachim high. Okay? Now here the spaceship is landing. It's coming down. Okay? At what point is it considered to be on the ground? That's one issue that you have to worry about. Because if it's within shlosha tefachim, then we can extend, this is a cone of the spaceship now, actually, it's coming down. Okay, we can extend in the Gemara's terms, that kind of spaceship is called a kaveret. A kaveret is basically the cone of a rocket. It might be used for building, for having bees, you know. I mean, you never know what these aliens are busy doing. But the fact is that it's shaped in that spaceship kind of look. It's round. Here you go. Here's your spaceship as it's landing.
Apollo capsule.
There you go. That's the top of the capsule.
It really is like Apollo.
Yeah. Just need to use modern equivalents. Now it's a Russian spaceship, which means that it's basically made out of bamboo and stuff like that. With pieces sticking out of it. It's not at all even or anything like that.
but they're the only ones going to space these days, you know?
It's always the simple thing that works, which it's the more sophisticated you get, you know, the easier it is to be wiped out. That's okay. As we know in general.
Keep it simple, stupid.
Yeah. But in any event, we have a couple of things that we have to consider. First of all, how large is the spaceship? Because in this case, the measurement of a separate reshus would require 4 by 4, but how do we measure 4 by 4 if it's in a circle? The cone is circular. Now, it turns out that the Gemara holds that the cone has to enclose a space of 4 by 4. In other words, it's not enough to have an area of 4 by 4. That we already saw because we had the case of a trench, let's say, right? Trench doesn't matter if it's 3 miles long. It's not 4 wide. You can't add the distance in one direction to the other, which is essentially what you do when you look to taking an area. It's not the surface area that's important. So we need to have an enclosed 4x4 area inside of this cone. Okay, that's one issue to think about. Another issue to think about is the dinim of mechitzos. Because as this spaceship is landing, when it gets to within 3 tefachim of the ground, the din of lavud kicks in, which essentially creates a force field that allows this spaceship to hover there, and the sides of the cone are now viewed as extending down to the ground. So actually, if it's only 7 point something tefachim, some masharu, it basically has landed before its top is within 10 tefachim of the ground, which leads to another problem. Even if it's a reshus b'fnei atzma, or even if it's not a reshus b'fnei atzma, even if it's too small, it doesn't have 4x4. Part of it is sticking up above 10 tefachim. If part of it is sticking up above 10 tefachim, it means that it never really landed entirely in reshus harabim. That's a different issue. You've got a whole lot of things to consider over here. So let's talk about this. I'm Rabbi. Zorak kaveret l'reshut rabbi. Gogoma asara. Ve'ina rechava shisha chayav. Rechava shisha patur. Now Abaye's yesod is that as long as it's still a kli, you're chayav. But the moment that it becomes a reshut la'atzma, which means that it's 4x4 and 10 tefachim high, you're not chayav. Why are you not chayav? Rashi says you're not chayav because we learn it's from the Mishkan. And in the Mishkan they threw basically spools of thread and the thing that you spin with that you attach the arif to? The heddle, right? So they would, the shuttle. So they would throw the shuttle back and forth in weaving at that time. If you were weaving a large thing, the only way to get the shuttle across, you threw it for somebody across the side. He pulled it, then you moved the heddles, threw the shuttle back, and so on. So that was their hotzah. That type of hotzah was a kli. We never find the concept of throwing a reshus. Therefore, it's not included. Tosfos says, first of all, there's two completely different dinim for which we learn out Hotzah and Zrika, and Rashi's getting mixed up. He's learning Hotzah out of Zrika, and in fact, it really, to move a kaberet is a different issue completely. Zorak really isn't learned from there. But the issue over here is a simple logical issue. You can't move a reshus into another reshus. A reshus is itself. So what are you going to say? You move the reshus ayokit into reshus aravin, so now you're chayim. The reshus ayokit is a reshus ayokit. So it's as if you moved something from reshus ayokit to a reshus ayokit to a reshus aravin. So there's no way to do such a hotza anyway.
In the sense it doesn't move. It doesn't have a relationship.
It can't be in Rishus HaRabim without being in itself. That's the issue. Not because that's similar to Mishkan. You didn't do the nature of Zrika. Whatever, the reason for this machlok is something that we'll have to get into as we go. And see the implications of the differences between Zrika and Hotza, which we haven't really looked into at all yet. Because it's not really our parak. We keep bringing in things of Zrika, but Hazorek is much later on in the Masechet. But in any event, for one or the other reason, once you have a 4x4 nose cone coming down, which is 10 tefachim high, you can't now be chayav on it if you shot it off from your rishus into rishus harab. Okay? Now the problem is that Abaye uses a formula of a nose cone that has a radius, that has a diameter of 6 tefachim. Now obviously that's way off, because even though Chazal have determined for the purposes of analyzing halachic issues, that the Torah is makbid only on an approximation of 1.4 to be the square root of 2. And therefore, we have a general rule that says that a diagonal is measured, in terms of the Pythagorean theorem, is measured for each amma contains in its alakson, in its diagonal, it contains actually 1 2/5, which is 1.4, right? So that one and a fifth, which is the 1.4. So the reason for that is, yeah, 1.2 fifths, yeah, is the reason for that is that the Torah gives us places where we can define things that are sufficiently meduyak la'alach. As we pointed out many times, we're not interested in a very precise reality in halacha because we're not using instruments in halacha. We're eyeballing something. So therefore, 1.4 is the value of the square root of 2, and so whatever it is, the kaveret does not require 6 in order to get a diagonal, which becomes now the the diameter of the circle that we're trying to put the square into. It's going to be the diagonal of that square. So really, it only needs 5 point something, right?
More than 5.
Yeah, of course, okay. Yeah. But so Rashi says, I mean, it would be enough to have 5 3/5, and you'd already have a 4 by 4. What do we need to talk about 6 for? So Rashi says, well, nothing nami. I mean, it's just that Abai is trying to be, not to be medayik, but to be machmir, so people won't come to do such a thing. What was that supposed to mean? I mean, we're not being machmir to do it. We're talking about whether you're chayav chatas or not. I mean, you can't be not dark on saying that somebody should bring a chatas that something is not chayav chatas. That's very strange. What's that, not dark? So Tosis suggests maybe the issue is over here is that we need to have the measurement on the inside of the cone in order for it to be. In other words, we can't include the thickness of the walls, and the reason that we're saying 6 by 6 is in order to deduct the standard thickness of a kaveret. He himself has problems with that, and that's something that we'll set aside for the moment. I just want to sensitize you to the issue. So basically, when we're saying 6, that has now a diameter of 6, what we really mean, a nose cone that incorporates a space of 4 by 4 in it, right? All right, so it's basically an inscribed square in this circle of 6, which is really 5 3/5. And so if it's less than that, then you're chayav, because then it's a kli, it's not a rishus. It's not big enough to be a rishus. It requires a minimum of 4 by 4 to be a rishus. So therefore, you would be potter only if it's more than 6, whereas Rava says no. If it's 10 tvachim high, because it's a Russian spaceship, it has stuff sticking out from it. And when stuff sticks out from it, that extends upward. Remember that if you're making this nose cone out of a basket weave of reeds, then the way in which you weave is you have your shittim. The orev always bends over at the end of the basket, but the shittim sticks out, keeps sticking out a little bit above, correct? I mean, sometimes you'll cut it down, but if you're making a very primitive kli, a basket, you'll have those little pieces that they're sticking up, and you're putting now the other piece in a circle around it. So that means that the top of the basket has little pieces jutting up. If you have pieces jutting up, says Rava, and this thing is, we're talking now that it's landing on its bottom, it's not being used as a spaceship, but as a container, so now it's landing on its bottom. When it hits bottom, there's still a big sticking out of 10 tvachim. But if sticking out of 10 tvachim, it's not entirely in the Rishat HaRabim, because above 10 tvachim, part of it's in a Mokum Tur. And if part of it's in a Mokum Tur, you can't be a Machayev a person for partially doing Otsa into Rishat HaRabim. You have to be able to do the whole thing in Rishat HaRabim. And therefore, you would be put. Okay? Even if it is smaller than a rishus. This is what Rav is saying. Abaye does not take into consideration the piece is sticking up, just because the other is insignificant. An insignificant thing that isn't serving any purpose in the kli, and is just an inaccurate rendering of the original idea of the kli, isn't kosher to be considered to be ogre somewhere else. It's not somewhere else. We ignore it. It's bottled to the kli.
The top is considered, therefore, where the two come, you know, where the two are both, where's the basket?
The fringes don't count.
What was that?
Because what's considered significant is that...
It's only the point at which you have an orev around.
Right.
Correct.
According
to
Rabbi,
anything
larger than 10 tefachim can never be
higher
than
correct.
But Abaye agrees to that. Mm-hmm. Abaye agrees to that, as we'll see. The only issue that Abaye has is with the orev, with the shiti. Right? That's the tisket, not the tasket. One is the shiti and one is the orev. But over here, you got to have both of them in the Rishus HaRabim. Okay? So now, comes along the Gemara to add now another issue. Let's take a look at Rav first, inside. Rav Amar, Afilena Rechava Ashisha, Potur, even if it's not 6 tefachim wide in its diameter, and it's only a clear still potter, my time, E Efshar, the Krumiot Shel Kana, Shelo Yalu Lamala Miasara. There's no way that you're going to have a basket that is accurate enough that it shouldn't have some pieces of straw sticking up above the 10 tefachim, and therefore it's not in Rishat HaRabim. Now, suppose indeed this thing is now landing and it's coming down on the other side. Kafa'a al-pia, its open side is now facing the ground. Ah! Here even Abaye agrees that if it's more than Shiva v'mashu, there's no way to be Mechayev, even though it's a kli. How does this work? Since there's a din of lava, and we have to distinguish between two elements of lava, there's a concept of lava that we saw before. And once something is within 3 tefachim of the ground, it's basically viewed as being at rest on the ground, right? That's only in terms of the concept of rest. It's not an extension. For all intents and purposes, if the ground of Rishat HaRabim was higher than it was. But there's also a din of lobo that applies to mechitzot. Mechitzot, by definition, is not the bottom of a kli, it would only be the inside of the kli. So if you turn something upside down, it now is mechitzot, it's continuing downwards. One of the dinim of mechitzot, as we see by Sukkah, one of the dinim of mechitzot is we could see them as extending downwards once they get within, not at, but within 3 tefachim from the ground. Which means that if they're 7 plus a tiny bit, that really they land, so to speak, at 3, a little bit less than 3, but then the theme is still in Rishon Rabbi. But the moment it's above 7 plus something, let's say 7.5, it doesn't need to be 7.5, be 7 and 2 mashus, however you'll measure that, with 2 measurable increments. So then it lands, so to speak, halachically, before it's entirely within 10 tefachim, because some of it is sticking up the top of the nose cone. The top of the nose cone, this is a fantastic means of propulsion, by the way. You use a lovewood for also propelling, not just for landing. Imagine, that would be pure, a totally different way of getting to the moon. So it's sort of like electromagnetic waves. Once you've got the first love, but we now view that the heat's thing there, now they extend further and so on, it just keeps going. It might even propagate at the speed of light. You never know how fast love could be. So now, the issue is, if you've got Shiva plus 2 mashus, let's say Shiva b'mechza, then you would be potter. Whereas Rav Ashi says, no, you're creating mechitzas where mechitzas don't exist. The type of mechitza that Lovud works on is a mechitza that is meant to be reaching the ground somewhere. A mechitza for a kli is by definition oriented to its inside, not towards touching anything outside. So we have 2 concepts of a mechitza. A mechitza that comes to separate one space from another space, that type of separation has a din of Lovud. Sure, if you would have a mechitza for your sukkah, which is coming now to create an enclosed space, and you put it 3 tefachim and a little bit less than 3 tefachim above the ground, it would be connected to the ground. But that doesn't mean you could take a pot and say, well, here I have a mechitza. Well, okay, that's not a mechitza. That's a mechitza that's used to hold things in a kli. It doesn't come to define the space. It comes to serve the logistical purpose of maintaining something inside of itself. And therefore, it doesn't have dinim of lovud that apply to mechitzas at all. You can effectively ignore the fact that lovud hits the bottom. And the mela, even if it would have that, afilu shiva b'metri b'chayev. My taima, mechitzot letochan asuyot. Mechitzot here are meant for including something in them. They're not meant for defining the difference between an inside space and an outside space. And therefore, they don't have the dinim of spatial mechitzas.
The opinion that says it would be clutter, there was an analysis happening the instant this thing was suspended three fucking
off. At that point, it landed.
But in reality, it passed through that very quickly. And
here we go to Zeno again.
Yeah, I mean, why are we choosing an instant when a moment later it's fully within Rishi Dharam? Why would you?
Because at that point, my active episode was finished.
So at that point, it's considered at rest, and it's not.
Yeah. Right. I mean, the truth is, there's a machlokus whether we're talking about the case where it's reshus bifnei atzma, that it does have 6x6. Where over there, you could say at that point it was a reshus. What happens afterwards isn't no idea. That's how Tosfos learns. The Riva learns that we're bedavka talking about a case where you do have 6, and that's the reason that you have the tour, not where you don't have 6. Rashi is learning it's dafka in the case where you don't have 6. We're talking about the problem of the kli landing. But again, this goes beyond our requirements for this moment. We'll maybe be able to get back to this in Dinam of Zrika. Now, the next thing that we want to talk about is a continuation of the idea of the extensions of Rishus HaRab. We spoke about Rishut HaYachid extending upwards. We spoke about Rishut HaRabim only extending to 9 to 10 tefachim high. But we also spoke about a area within Rishut HaRabim that could define itself as a separate Rishus. We have a Makom Ptur. What is a Makom Ptur? Anything that is more than 3 tefachim higher than the ground, to get away from Lavud, and less now, it's less than 10. And the question is, if it has... If this way I can see it. So if it has now an area 4x4, it's a karmelit. And the Rabbonin give it a din of Rishus b'fnei atzma. But the Ikar Adin, it's really a no space. If it's less than 4x4, it remains a no space, which is a makom ptur d'oraita. And therefore, it's not in the Rishus Rabbi. So now what that means, if you think about it, is that if you have let's say, a small one of those poles that we talked about before, the gidudi, and you put something down on it after walking 4 amas, which is a rabim, you just put something down on a mokum patur. Therefore, you would not be chayav, because even though it's within 10 tefachim of the ground, but it's on a pole that has now made itself a separate rishus, and because that pole is a 4x4, it wouldn't even be mutar lechatchila, because it's only a mokum patur. Okay? However, comes on Ula to say, such is not always the case. We saw before there was an idea of chorei rishut harabim. The chorei rishut harabim could have a din of rishut harabim because they're bought out of rishut harabim as being part of the tashmish harabim. We also saw that there were things that restricted the flow of a rishut harabim, which on the contrary turned it into a non-rishut harabim. Here we have a curious situation where if we have something that would normally restrict flow, because it would be an amud in the middle of rishut harabim, if it's of a height of 9 tefachim, it becomes part of the Rishut HaRabim. Why? Because 9 tefachim is just the right height for you to fix your backpack on. So if you're carrying now a backpack, you turn around, and you back up to this pole, you see, and it pulls up the backpack, and now you pull on the straps, and it's perfect. So that means that an amud, which is 9, according to Rashi, precisely 9, because it takes a normal height of a person and his burden. According to others, 9 up to 10. No, it's above 9. Obviously, once it's outside of 10, it's not Rishut HaRabim at all. But if it's above 9, then it's useful for adjusting a burden. And because of that, it becomes now Tashmish HaRabim, and it's the same as basically Chorei Rishut HaRabim, which is part of Rishut HaRabim. Cute. That's a very, very good point. That's exactly what those things are, right? The diaper changing station. There's a concept of shelves that not only don't get into the way, but they are needed for the utilization of the rod. Okay. Less than 9, it just gets in the way. So therefore, it has a din of a mokum patur. It's not both of the rishus around it. If anything, it causes problems. If you hold that an amud is sufficient to cause a problem, which was a machloket, how much of a flow restriction is considered to be a violation of rishus around it? But when it's usable by the Rishus HaRabim for kituf, then it becomes part of the Rishus HaRabim. We already talked about the fact that we're talking about dwarfs, remember? The table is 10 tefachim in front. It's a big backpack. All right.
It's exactly 9.
Rashi is exactly. I was learning 9 and higher. Once it's 9, it's already usable. You can bend down on it. If it's over 10, it's not as a rabbi. But if it's above 9, it's fine. That's how those are.
One tefach.
The dwarfs that we had? The ones who landed in the Kaberet?
That doesn't
standard on them. 3 days. Yeah, 3 on which? So, Omar Ulam, Amud Tish'a, Rishut Rabim, Rabim Achatfim Alav, Bizar V'nachar Gabav Chayav, my time. Because here's how to look at it. Look, if it's less than 3 tefachim high from the ground, so then it's just part of the ground. Then Midrash Dar Sivei Rabim, people just step all over it, and it's part of the street level. Mishlosha Ad Tish'a, from 3 to 9, people don't step over it, it's like a step. So low Midrash Dar Sivei, but they also don't use it for anything else. Lo Ketufim Achatfim, so they don't use it to adjust their burdens. Right? But Tisha, once it hits 9, Vanai Mechatchen Aluya, at that point, they do use it for adjusting the burdens. Omani Abayel of Yosef, how about the negative? Aguma, what's the din? If you have a hole in the ground, now again, we saw that a hole in the ground is measured exactly the same way as something that is an amud. They're just inverted images, right? So you can have either a guma, which is less than 4x4 and more than 3 but less than 10 downwards, and it has a din of a mokum patur. 4x4 and it has a din of a karmeli. 10 and it has a din of a rishus harabim. Is there also a din of an inverted hole being an amud? If an amud 9 is useful for kituf, then if you're an inverted dwarf, a hole of 9 is perfect for kituf. Actually, a hole of 9 probably serves another function, right? It's a place in which you can stick things. In other words, once it's already at that level, you could put something in it to protect it from the Yilchavrabim a little bit. Is that?
Bor Bitachon.
Bor Bitachon, exactly. Perfect size for Bor Bitachon. So perhaps a Amud would also be considered to be a Tashmish, because people do use it to protect things. Omar Levechen the Guma, Rabbi Yossi says, okay, if it's a Tashmish of the Rabbi, so a Guma becomes the equivalent of a Chorei Rishu Sarabi. How dare you? One of the most usable holes you've ever seen. You call it a barber shutarabim. It's only if you fall in it that it becomes a barber shutarabim. If I use it, it's a perfectly valid place. Unless, of course, I dug it, then you'll see. Yeah, Yucky Man. What does that have to do with it? I mean, that's been in Ezekiel. You would imagine any shamans. Rabbi says, no, a guma can't be considered to be a useful thing. My time. What do you say? You can bend down and put it there. That's not what we're calling tashmish. Tashmish is convenience, not bending. If God wanted me to touch my toes, he would have put them on my knees. Fine. Esei Ravada bar Masa L'Rava. You, Rava, claim that tashmish ayadei atchak is not called tashmish, and therefore the usage in Rishut HaRabim is not bottled to the din of the Rishut HaRabim. Doesn't it say as follows, that haitaku pato munachat Rishut HaRabim? Somebody sets his backpack down in Rishut HaRabim, and that backpack is 10 tvachim high and 4 tvachim wide. So it's now defined itself as a reshut hayachid. Ein metaltalin lo mitochal reshut harabim velo reshut harabim letocha. But if it's pachot became, if it's less than any of these measurements, then either less in height or less in width, then it's okay. Why is it okay? Doesn't it become a Carmelite if it's less than 4 tefachim wide and more than 3 tefachim high? No. Because the halacha is that a kli cannot be a Carmelite. A kli is always batel when it's a rishus, a no rishus. It was if something is large enough to have defined a space for itself that the Torah recognizes as a space, so then it's a real rishut ayachid, such as the case of the kaveret, then of course it's a rishus and a rishus. But when the rabbanim define a no space as having a meaning as a space, and they call it a Carmelite, they can't use that definition to cancel the idea of being inside of a different space. So you can't say that a Kli now creates its own space called a Carmelite, and now it doesn't matter if you move a Kli or not. Because after all, you're moving a Rishus and a Rishus. A Carmelite's not a Rishus. It's only the Rabbanan who pretend it's a Rishus. They're certainly not coming now to be Mavato, the din of Kalim, and to create a din of Rishus and Rishus Arab, obviously. So once it's a kli, it's not a Carmelite. We had this idea earlier in the Masechta, that there's no such thing as a kli, which is a Carmelite. That was the sugya of the Traskal and so on that we were talking about. You could be maybe a mocha for hanocha purposes, but it certainly can't define itself as a separate rishus.
Rishus
a
yoki?
A Carmelite.
No, rishus
a yoki. What do you mean? Because when you rise, it's a rishus. The Torah doesn't care whether rishus is made out of canvas mechitzas or whether it's made out of brick mechitzas. Fact is, your backpack is large enough to be a rishus. Where do we ever see it makes a difference what it's made out of? Okay, but once it's not a real rishus, it's a small backpack, so then, in Ochinani, it's not going to change anything. It'll be like a regular kli in Rishut HaRabim. So pochot became metatomi. Therefore, you can take whatever you want out of your backpack in Rishut HaRabim, and it's not a problem. Okay? V'chein beguma, and the same thing would be true if your backpack was a traveling guma, sort of like the Be'er Shel Miriam. Right? So now you have a guma in Rishut HaRabim. It's the same thing. Now, when it says the same thing, what does that mean? It's the same thing. I mean, it isn't referring to the last piece over here, in which it says that if it's less than the shear of 10 tefachim, or less than 4x4, that you can carry. Put things in and out of that guma. Now, how can you put things in and out of that guma? A guma is not a kli. A guma is a real, old-fashioned Carmelite. And how can you carry from a Carmelite into a Rishus HaRabim?
Negative space.
Negative space is a Carmelite. Right? That's how we define a Carmelite. Either something in Amud or a guma that is Mechalek Rishus V'Yatzma, meaning it's more than 3 tefachim high or low, and it's 4x4, but less than 10 high or deep. It's a Carmelite. So what do you mean by saying? Elamai, you're talking about precisely the case we spoke of, which is a nice guma usable by members of the Rishut HaRabim. And therefore, it's the equivalent of the Amud Tisha, because people use gumot Rishut HaRabim to protect things that they shouldn't be trampled on. So That means tashmish, you have to bend over, and you have to put something in, but that's also considered to be a valid tashmish. So you see that you're wrong. Says Rav, no, it's not referring to the sefer, what you're allowed to do. It's referring to the ratio that you're not allowed to do. So say, b'chein b'guma, if you have a guma that is 10 tefachim deep, and 4x4, then of course you're not allowed to move anything in and out of, because then you'd be carrying from Rishut HaRabim into Rishut HaYachid, or from Rishut HaYachid into Rishut HaRabim. Hi, Rich.
Hello, bud. Happy? I'm fine. I'm carrying something from
where are you?
The shoot of beams to the
well, where are you? In a guma, a backpack? How do you see things?
A cloud. A kuba on the table.
Above 10 bucks.
Okay. Now, we have another kasha on Rav. And here's a really cute kasha. This is, you're going to have fun with this one, Rich. Answer. This is based on the din of an Eruv Tichumi. Now, an Eruv Tichumi means that essentially a person creates an artificial place that he is supposedly living in on Shabbat, and therefore he can extend his tchum from that spot instead of from the place where he's really eating. And the way he does this is by putting a meal in the place where he's going to be, mentally. It's a conceptual place. Now, the problem is that his meal has to be accessible to him in his place at the time that Shabbos is chal. If it's accessible to him, then it's considered to be his bakom shvita. If he lost the key, for instance, the only way he could get to it was by breaking down the door or sawing down a tree or whatever, then it would not be considered to be getting to him because he couldn't do that on Shabbat. Okay? So suppose that a person had in Kavanah, my bakom shvita is in a Rishut HaRabim. And he goes to that place, or he sends somebody to that place, and he says, take my Eruv, which consists of a meal, symbolic meal, and stuff it into a hole in that Rishut HaRabim. Now the problem is, how are you going to get your meal? Because if your meal is in a hole, and that hole is Rishut HaYochid, and you're just, forget it, then you're really in trouble. Because you're in one space, and your meal's in another space. If it's a Karmelit, you should also be in trouble. How can you carry from a Karmelit to Rishut HaRabim? And yet, look what it says in the Braita. So if he was meniach this Eruv in the bor above 10 tefachim, it's a kosher Eruv. Below 10 tefachim, it's not a kosher Eruv. Now what does above and below mean? Is that the size of the bor, or is that the placement of the meal within the bor? Let's first clarify that. Clearly it can't be referring to the placement within a bor, because if the bor is 10 tefachim deep, then everywhere in that bar is a Rishut HaYachid, even if it's right at the top of the bar, it's still in a Rishut HaYachid. Right? So it can't mean that. We're talking about a deep pit that's got 10 tefachim and more in it. And when we use the word lamala and lamata, we mean lamala, the dalei b'chotzei. That lamala means that you've made the meal, you stuck it in a little place higher than the bottom of the bar. And lamata is, you left it on the bottom. No, because then mali lamata. What's the difference where you put it in the bar? The bar is already Rishut HaYachid, and therefore hu b'makom echad, eruv lo b'makom acher hu, and that's not a kosher eruv at all. Elalav, we've got to be talking about, that the bar itself does not have 10 tefachim. So when you say the eruv is an eruv, why is it an eruv? Why isn't it in a karmelit? How can you take it out of this bar into Rishut HaRabim? It must be because even though it's tashmish ayyadei hachak, and you got to bend down to take it out of the bor, but tashmish ayyadei hachak is called a valid tashmish, and you and your Erev are in the same reshut, because that guma has a din of being part of Rishut HaRabim, which is exactly what Rava was denying. You were saying a guma can never have a din of Rishut HaRabim, because it's too inconvenient to use. And here you see that inconvenient use is perfectly valid use. That's a good question. So he answered it, depending on his mood, in different ways. So sometimes he would say, Zimni Mishamile, Hu Ve'Ruvo B'Karmelit. But actually, when it said that he wanted to be in a Rishut HaRabim, it didn't mean a Rishut HaRabim. It meant a Karmelit. So it's taking from a Karmelit to a Karmelit. That's okay. He said, well, it says Rishut HaRabim. Well, the reason it says Rishut HaRabim is because it's not a Rishut HaYochid. We already saw that idea before. That if we're not talking about a technical definition, then we don't We don't care so much. We just want to establish it's not a religious idol. Zimni Mishani Lakes. Other times, he said, you know, the truth is, he is a Rosh Hashanah. And the truth is, his Eruv is in a Carmelis. And therefore, you would say, aha, so how can he get his Eruv? I'll tell you how he can get his Eruv. When is the Eruv Chal? Bein HaShemashot, at the onset of Shabbat. Is there an Isser Rabbon and Bein HaShemashot? Do we say, since Bein HaShemashot is a suffix that it's the day, so it's like a suffix Rabbonin. So they're never going to be machmer on doing an Isser Rabbon and Bein HaShemashot. In which case, you could always get it out Bein HaShemashot. And therefore, since at that moment it was accessible, therefore it becomes Luvei Ruvoba Makom Echad. And it's going according to Rebbe, the Rebbe, Yidiyama, Kol Davar Shul Mishum Shvut, Lo Gazru Alav Bein HaShemashot. Anything which is only us because of a Shvut Durabanan, such as the Carmelite, which doesn't exist with Yuraita, is not meaningful Bein HaShemashot. Hey, don't think I'm pushing you around, okay? Don't think that I'm saying things that are a little bit strange and pushy. No. I'm telling you that it's got to be this pshat. I didn't just make it up that something that is not usable in an easy way is not called a Rishat Rabin. I have very good basis for it. It's not. Take a look at the Mishnah. The Mishnah says if you've got a rekak mayim, you've got a puddle, and it's the kind of thing that you would think is going to restrict the Rishut HaRabim. But the Rishut HaRabim goes right through this puddle, okay? So the Rishut HaRabim ma'alechet bo. And there's water, it's like the Kvish to the Yam HaMelech. There's always that place where there's water pouring across the Kvish. And everybody drives through it. Sometimes it picks up a truck and throws it into the Yam HaMelech. But usually, that doesn't happen, right? So the din is, Hazorek l'tochar v'amot chayav. You'd be chayav. Because it's considered to be part of the Rishus HaRabim. Now, how deep is this Rekak Mayim? The Kama here Rekak Mayim, when we say this, we're talking about it doesn't have a depth of 10 tefach. So it's less than 10 tefach. Furthermore, now get this is furthermore. Furthermore, Rekak Mayim, Rishus HaRabim, Malechet Bo, Hazorek Utoko Arba Amot, Chayav. Did I miss something? Did you just say that? So I can excuse the fact that you want to talk about two cases. Okay? You want to talk about Rekak twice, Rekak, okay? I can understand. You know what you're trying to tell me? One is summertime water and one is wintertime water. And that's a big difference between your willingness to negotiate this water if it's 80 degrees outside or if it's 20 degrees outside. I think we would all agree to that. So you want to say, yes, we need Bimota Chama. Say, okay, Bimota Chama will accept the fact that people are going to walk through this water. Because, I've been in Israel for really enough, Shiloh. It's really hot out there. Your feet are burning up. You're wearing these sandals. Got blisters all over. You take a look at that puddle, and you say, must be a mirage. There couldn't be water. Oh, there's water. Oh, wonderful. Feels so nice and cool on my toesies. So there, a guy walks through the water, and he's fine. But in the middle of winter, he's going to walk through the water. Therefore, you need to tell me that it's Yimotak Geshamim. I would think to myself, never. On the other hand, if you would have said Yimotak Geshamim, I would say, okay. You're filthy, yeah, you've been walking through the mud, you got a place over here to put your sandals into the water, clean things off a bit, you know. And anyway, you're dirty, I'm certainly not going to make things worse. Okay, so over there, I got the mitzvah. Person is dirty, Mikri Menachis, he'll walk through the water also. But, Yemota Chamah was going to go into a muddy puddle, he wouldn't do that. So therefore, you would want to tell me two cases. Fine, Necha. But for that, you repeat the entire thing? You say, V'rishut HaRabim HaLechetor, you already said that. What am I? I'm not an idiot. You repeat the entire case twice. That the Rabbi Mahali, why are you stressing the word Hiluch? That's what I'm being the diet says, Rabbi. So Hiluch trades in the lonely. I'll tell you what the pshat is. The Mishnah is trying to make a very important point that a Rishut HaRabim can be defined by inconvenient Hiluch, but not by inconvenient use. The essence of a Rishut HaRabim is the fact that it's a place where people walk. And if they're going to walk there, I don't care if it's inconvenient. That's a Rishut HaRabim. The essence of Rishus HaRabim is not defined by a place that people use. And therefore, to say that, somebody made a mistake of thinking, well, if a puddle is considered to be Rishus HaRabim, surely a hole in the ground is Rishus HaRabim because I can safely deposit my pet rabbit in it. No. That's not. He looked. Why does it mean he looked? Yes. But not Tashmish. That's why I said it to you. I didn't just pick that rabbit out of a hat. Now, therefore, Shmamina. Amr of Yehuda, further to the discussion that we had about leaving part of your spaceship above Asarat Tefachim, would be a type of carrying where you never move the entire object. Suppose you're carrying a long bunch of those horrifically annoying metal rods that they always drag down the street when somebody's doing shibutzim and pouring cement. And it's always at 5 o'clock in the morning that you hear this horrific jangling sound going down the streets of the Rova. What is that? That's a guy who can't lift up the whole thing, so he picks up one end and he drags him down the street. So if you're carrying one of those things, one of the easy ways of doing it, and it's more fun because it makes an awful lot of noise, is instead of dragging it, pick up one end, flip it over and smash it down, then pick up the other end. That way you can keep flipping it, right? And it sounds almost as bad as the church bells in the Lutheran church sound. Have that same kind of horrific, you know, banging on a pot sound. So if you do that, is it considered to be a act of otzar or not? Says Rav Yudah, I zirza the kani, Rama v'zakve lo matayev. It's not considered to be an anakira and anokha to lift up one side while the other side's on the ground, flip it over while having never lifted the thing up. So even though you managed to move it a couple of miles, you never did really otzar until the akhara. So you pick up the whole thing and then you move it.
Dragging that
thing
across the water.
Dragging, well, this may be something else. Is dragging the same thing as Malach Domi Domi? This is not the case. He's not talking about a case of drag. We'll get to it. He's talking about flipping. Okay, I think we should get into our Carmelite ideas tomorrow.
There's the latest example of here for a month.